the volume.
The Colin Cowherd Podcast brought to you by FanDuel. It's never been easier to play fantasy on FanDuel. Whether you love basketball, golf, soccer, or any fantasy sport, there is a contest for every fan. FanDuel, more ways to win. Hi, everybody. Welcome into the Colin Cowherd Podcast. Hey, an update on my health. Anybody who follows me on Twitter or Instagram knows I had a recent health scare past Saturday night. I've taken the week off from radio and television. Those are three-hour broadcasts. That's a very heavy lift. I am doing some podcast work for The Volume Sports, my new company. Listen, I'm fighting this thing. I'm attacking this thing. I'm getting massages every day to increase blood circulation. I've tripled my water dosage. I'm taking blood thinners. I'm going for 2 hour walks a day. I found a little blood clot in my right lung. It's unprovoked, as they call it. It wasn't COVID. It wasn't travel. They don't really know. I took a battery of blood tests. Almost all are in. Inconclusive to this point. Really appreciate the outpouring of support. It's funny. My wife's a vegan. I eat nothing but lawn clippings. I work out every day, but sometimes, as a friend told me the other day, once you get to 55 years old, shit breaks. So, it's my new reality, but just want to say thanks for the support. It's not going to stop me. And, I'll just try to be smarter, keep my eye on things, but the volume is rolling. I really want you, if you could, indulge on some of our new podcasts. I love Jenkins and Jones, NBA podcast. So smart, so funny, so raw. I think they kind of embody what we want the volume to be. Check them out. They have Tuesday and Thursday shows. If you love the NBA, they are so money. Speaking of NBA, we bring on our guest, Daryl Morey. I like bringing on my friends. Daryl Morey is my friend, current basketball president for the Sixers, former NBA exec of the year around the Houston Rockets, and they were always in the news and always entertaining for years and years. And then it's NBA life. There are no jobs forever. Daryl Morey moves out of Houston and goes to Philadelphia, a team I think most NBA fans would acknowledge that has a lot of talent. We're waiting for the chemistry to work. And Daryl is joining us. Now, I just got out of the hospital. I had a little blood clot. Probably because I travel too much, and you travel 9 times more than I do, and you're fit as a fiddle. So there's some order here I don't understand. Now, where are you right now this second?
Portland right now.
Oh, come on. Where are you going to go to dinner tonight?
Well, so we're basically in a bubble. Like they act like we're out of the bubble, but the NBA, I think it's the right thing. We don't get to do much but our hotel room, our team meal room, and the arena. So we're not allowed to go to restaurants.
Are you staying at the Heathman? Where's your hotel?
We're at the Nine. Yeah.
Oh, that's swanky.
It's weird. I don't know if it's probably weird and swanky. Yes.
Well, Portland's weird. So yes, that, yes. That it's yes. For the record, spent 7 years there. Great NBA city. You know, it's interesting when you are a good personnel guy. You have a good eye for personnel. When Dame Lillard came out of Weber State, he was obviously a scorer. You'd know he was going to score in the NBA. Are you surprised how prolific a late game big shot scorer he's been?
I mean, I think in general, someone coming from a small school has the odds stacked against them. If anyone's going to make it, it's usually guards. They tend to be the most under-recruited. It's a little harder to see how big, how athletic. I do remember watching the Weber State tape and going like, oh my goodness, this guy. And like, how is he at Weber State? And actually a lot of our draft interview was like trying to understand how he ended up at Weber State. And, still one of the all-time great trades. Portland traded like 2 months of Gerald Wallace for him. So.
Yeah.
Pretty great trade.
Yeah. I mean, Steph Curry has a little bit of that at Davidson, right? Like you know, you're kind of surprised he ends up there. When was your epiphany? When was your moment with Steph that you felt like, boy, we're seeing something here that's just different than what the league offers?
I don't think it really hit me. Everyone knew it was pretty good, right? Like, you know, anyone who goes in the draft in the top 15 is a pretty good player no matter what. But when it really clicked for me that he was going to be special was that the series, I believe it was against New Orleans, where, I mean, he was a problem. Like everything was, it was just like he was at Davidson, except Golden State was Davidson. The entire defense was keyed on him and it still didn't matter. And that was probably my first moment. I think that was his third or fourth year in the league where that really popped for me.
So the Sixers are off to a great start. I've had my questions before about the chemistry with Embiid and Simmons. How do you see it? Instead of me giving an opinion, how do you see their chemistry?
Yeah, so I'm still learning. I would say Doc Rivers done an amazing job working with both of them. They're very supportive of each other, just as people, which is a great place to start. I think people who are from the outside see some of the obvious things, like you got a dominant big man, one of the better big men of all time, I think, when it's going to be all said and done, in Joel Embiid, and a guy whose strengths are not being out on the perimeter, more of a driver or defender, things like that. So people see that. The reality is, though, I mean, I go where the data is. When Ben and Joel have played together, they've been dominant.
Yep.
Because Ben is the spear that stops the spear of the defense, and then anything that gets by, Joel's cleaning up. And, I mean, that's why we're a top defense and have been. And then offensively, it works better than you might think. You can sort of divide the shot clock. You know, Ben's getting up the floor, going downhill, finding shooters early in the clock, and then including Joel, who'll be coming down the floor, later in the clock, can shoot threes. And then if all that doesn't work, it's a post up for Joel, a double team. And even if Ben isn't shooting, if you kick it out to Ben, he can attack downhill and then kick it out. It's worked. I mean, historically, those two together have been plus 10, plus 20, which are some of the best combos in NBA history.
So, you know, Doc, I'm a friend of Doc Rivers. I love Doc. Doc Rivers is Joe Torre in baseball. Is that he makes egos and stars work. I always say he's the stepdad you never wanted to disappoint. I had a stepdad. It's like, oh, I don't want to disappoint him. I got to work really, really hard. I got to catch these ground balls. Doc has a presence about him that he'll push the players at certain times. He's an ally, but don't disappoint him. So when you go through the process of, that's how I view Doc. When you go through the process, what did you see? What were you seeking? How did it work?
Yeah, and I think to your point on Doc, one thing, and I had worked with him in Boston years ago when started my career when I started with the Celtics. I think, you know, when you look at these studies of the best teachers of kids, they're the ones that just assume the players are better than they are. They come in with like a vision of each player and who they can be at a high level, and they essentially expect that level. But not in like an overt way, like you're a failure if you don't reach this level, but just like, I know you can do this. You know, I'm yelling at you because I know this is something you can do. Not I'm yelling at you because you're a fuck up or whatever. It's creating high expectations and then helping the players achieve them. And I think Doc's done amazing. And then he puts them in a system where their roles are clear. And they know what's expected. And I think like Tobias is thriving because of that, because of that as well.
Yeah, Tobias is having a really good year. Like Tobias is a great example. He's athletic. He always has been. He can score. He always has been able to. But I just didn't feel like he was comfortable. It's nothing against the coach. When I watched you guys play this year, Tobias feels comfortable, whatever that is.
Yeah, and to credit Doc, you know, as soon as I was with him, he was like, look, Tobias is going to be great here. Some of it's like he's mostly at the four, which, you know, Doc's been smart to put him at that position. Some of it is, you know, again, like I said earlier, Tobias, he's athletic and he can be a very good defender, and he has been this year. Doc just came in saying, like, he's going to be a good defender. And, you know, Tobias has put in the work, and Ben, Tobias, and Joel together have just anchored like a great defense.
The next time you're watching basketball, I've got the perfect way for you to get in on the action for free. I'm talking about NBA InPlay. Absolutely free to play on the FanDuel app and features all the fun of live betting. NBA InPlay turns every quarter of every game into a free contest where you can win real cash prizes. So while you're watching the game, all you have to do is predict the outcomes of plays and game props before they happen to claim your share of the prize pool. Best of all, a new contest starts every quarter of every game, giving you even more ways to win. FanDuel is the exclusive home for NBA InPlay, so the action is always available right at your fingertips on the FanDuel app. The app is easy to use. It takes less than 2 minutes to sign up. I did it. It's a breeze. And it doesn't matter where you live or where you're traveling to, because NBA InPlay is available in every state. Don't miss your shot. Get in the game and download the FanDuel app to start playing NBA InPlay today. Daryl Morey joining us on the Colin Cowherd podcast. You're an analytics guy, and I talk about this all the time. I've come up with a term, manalytics, where I am a believer in analytics, but I don't want my players to be code. I don't want them to be numbers. There are moments I have to travel with them. I eat dinner with them. I may see them at having a drink after a game and think they're down. They're having a relationship issue. There are moments where players are struggling with a nagging injury, and I have to move off analytics. Give me an analytic in basketball, Daryl, you will go to the wall on, and give me an analytic that you understand pushback.
Yeah, so, I mean, look, everything works backwards from winning. So, you know, anything that generates a big point differential is going to be, you know, an analytic, to use that term, that I'm going to go to the wall with. And I would say if there's one, it's the people who are efficient scorers generate point differential. So if you're going to be the guy who shoots, it better be a good shot. It better be one that you're comfortable. It better be one that you know you can score, because one of the best ways to get beat in this league is a lot of shots coming from players who, you know, just don't make them. Like, yeah, just like in baseball, what's the key thing? They're like, get on base. But really what they're saying is avoid outs. They're not saying get on base. They're saying avoid outs. Basketball is similar. Avoid missing shots. So it's not necessarily making shots, although they're two sides of the same coin. Avoid missing shots is the key. And I'm not saying much there. So I go to the wall on that one. On one that I understand pushback, I mean, there's a lot. I would say like individual game plus minus.
There are moments. Who else is on the floor with you? What's the game? What's the score of the game? What's the momentum?
There's so much to it. Like who you're against, if you're in garbage time, you know, there's just so much, you know, like I like to say that Tom Brady and myself, we both won 7 rings together. So, you know, that to me is the quintessential single game plus minus and why it's flawed.
Daryl Morey joining us. You know, you and I had lunch one time. We talked about this. And I went on Bill Maher one time and talked about this. I said, listen, every sport asks something different of me. And I told Bill Maher, I said, baseball asks me to be patient. There's no clock. Football asks me to deal with a regulated level of violence. Basketball occasionally asks me to listen to star players, overwhelmingly African American, have an opinion on something beyond basketball. I'm comfortable with it. The NBA is interesting, though, because since when I grew up with a Sonic, Spencer Haywood, players have pushed back. It has always been a player-driven league, always. NFL's always been more of a shield, coach, GM-driven league. But there's always a line. And I do think, I don't think we're in danger of going over the line, but I do think it's a line the NBA has to deal with that other sports don't deal with. You know, Mark Cuban in the anthem. You know, I don't want to, you know, put players in tough spots. Do you ever worry, because coaches still matter, front offices still matter, the owners and the capital fused into the league matter, is it something that there are discussions behind the scenes about, we're supporting our players, we're on the side of our players, but it's difficult to have a labor-run business, an employee-run business.
I think it's great, though. I mean, obviously, I'm biased. It really fits my personality as well. Look, the players are the product. The players are in really every sport, but the NBA the most are why people tune in. I think they should have a big seat at the table. I think we're so resonant with younger fans more than any other league, because what younger fans want is they want to root for players who are authentic. And I think our players are more authentic. They're more out there with their opinion. Yes, that's going to create uncomfortable conversations. That's going to create people who say, I don't want to watch anymore. That's going to create a lot of negative things. But I like where we're betting more than where other leagues are betting. Other leagues are betting on, you know, all political parties by shoes, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
We're betting on people are going to root for our players because they're authentic and they're out front with their opinions. And yeah, it's going to create a lot of potential issues all over the place. But I like the trade-offs long-term for the league.
Aesthetically, the NFL has always done a good job of understanding, listen, we're a television show. We'll change leagues if it makes the television show better. Baseball's in a little bit of a quandary, Daryl, where launch angle, a lot of the rules inhibit base runners. And base runners mean action and stealing bases. And we like activity. Aesthetically, the NBA now, you get into a night when there's 53-point shots. Have there been discussions? I once opined this on a show. If you took the three-point circle and it didn't go to the corner, you took away the corner three, and it went out about 6 feet or 4 feet up from the corner, it would not force defenders to defend that, and you'd take about 10 threes a night away. Are you at least, maybe concern's the wrong word, it's becoming very much a come down, chuck up a three league, and I don't think aesthetically, I think fans like dunks. I think they like conflict at the rim. I do.
Yeah, no, I think doing that would hurt spacing, so you'd actually lose some of the dynamic driving. I think, you know, if you wanted to minimize three-point shots, there are a couple ways to sort of fix what I think are reasonable issues where people are like, there's maybe too many threes. One would be you could make it farther back, widen the court, and keep the corners. Everyone then says, oh, well, then you're going to lose all these courtside seats. Don't do that. Well, if that's true, we should just make the court smaller. And, right? We didn't dream up the perfect size of a court. We should make it skinnier and put even more seats in. It doesn't right. matter. If you make the court wider, and obviously arenas have some issues there.
Right.
But if you could make it wider, you'd still have courtside seats. They'd just be in a different spot right. and still be super valuable. So you can do that. The other one that, you know, is too radical probably is if you made three-pointers worth four and two-pointers worth three, that would sort of balance the game out a little bit as well.
That feels radical to me.
It definitely should feel radical, but it would, like, the reality is the three-point shot's worth 50% more than a two-point shot. It's too much. Like, that's why you're seeing so many. Like, it's just, it's too much of a difference. And only something slightly radical is going to rebalance that, unfortunately.
Yeah. Does Adam, I've been told Adam Silver, and he's a pretty progressive guy, he has talked about the 3-point shot. He's a little ahead of it, saying he sees the optics like I do, which is, I do believe conflict at the rim. Zion Williamson's game is very attractive to me. I love watching him play. He is an outlier now in today's NBA. And I've been told, Silver, this is something, not a point of contention, but it's a topic.
I mean, I can't really speak for Adam, but I would say that it's a topic among GMs, you know, my peers. Like, you know, early in the year, I think you saw a lot of games that were like 30-point blowouts. And
yeah.
The reality is, like, that's still that you're going to get more and more of those. You're just going to have nights where one team makes half their threes, the other team makes 20%. And like, you know, it's just going to be a blowout, right? And that's just how it is. Now, every sport has blowouts, but I think, you know, that I understand the concerns. Every sport has them, like you said, in baseball, you know, football has the, you know, what is a cat? Like, there's all these, like, concerns in every sport. And what I like about basketball, we've been the most progressive about adjusting our sport. Whereas baseball, they'll form a committee, take 4 years, and the only rule changes is you can walk to first base without throwing it four times. Like, they had like 100 possible changes. We did one, and it was the most, you know, lame one, basically, in my opinion. So.
Were you shocked at the success of the bubble? I was. I thought it was so much better on television than I would have guessed. In fact, before the bubble happened, I watched the college basketball game in a similar setting, and it was awful. And I thought, this is a disaster for the league. And Joy Taylor and I said on the air after about 10 games, I'm like, this is really good. I can't believe how good it is. It was great television. In the end, were you, and the league did a lot of tweaking during it. Like, the first bubble game didn't look like the last bubble game. Were you a little surprised how smoothly it was pulled off?
I appreciate you just did something almost nobody does, which is like, I thought this and then I was wrong. It's so rare. I would say the part of the bubble I got right was I really thought it was going to work from a virus perspective, that we were going to get through based on the doctors I was talking to, that we were going to succeed there. I thought that the audience experience would be more flat. I agree with you. It was way better. Actually, my brother worked on the bubble technology to make all that happen. And I was shocked that it worked as well. Even like the fake crowd noise sort of works. It makes me feel sad. Sad as a human that like I could be so fooled. Yeah, the two things in sport that I'm shocked at fool people, the fake crowd noise works. The other one is in tennis, when they show the Hawkeye of where the ball lands.
Yeah.
And they show you a cartoon. Why does anyone believe the cartoon? Like, like, it's like they could show anything. You're like, you know, they're like, let's go to the replay. And it shows a like a cartoon. And you're like, oh, it was in. Oh, I believe the cartoon. So like, these are things that work on our reptile minds, basically.
Yeah, that's very funny. Daryl Morey, running the basketball operations for the Sixers. Listen, and we go back to Houston. Listen, it was a tough time. It was your owner, Frank Fertitta. I mean, good God, he's in the restaurant business.
Tillman
Fertitta. I'm so sorry. I know that. I've had him on the show. The family's a Vegas family. I know that.
There's a lot of Fertittas, but
there are.
The owner of the Rockets.
But it was a convergence, the perfect storm. Listen, he's in the restaurant business. That was in the casino business. Did anything get hit harder? So you've got financial squeezes going on. And, you know, the team was good, but that's not why you buy a team. He spent a lot on the team to buy it. The pandemic, the market was collapsing for a brief time. Did you feel that pressure as a general manager? Did you sense the walls coming in a little?
Not from a financial perspective. I will say Tillman is very savvy. Like, when he was first buying the team, I didn't understand that you could do what he's done with restaurants. And like restaurants, I went to business school. I was trained as the worst business in the world, and he's somehow made it. He's made $6 billion on it. So he's a very savvy guy. Never felt any financial pressure. Was really good. I just think for me, it was just time. Time for a change.
Yeah. When you go back to James Harden, you know, I threw this out a couple of weeks ago on the show. And I said, in my lifetime, I go back to Lou Alcindor when, at the time, Lou Alcindor told the Bucks the year before he was traded, I want out. He didn't make it public. He wanted to make it easier for the organization to move him. They actually got a haul, Daryl. And I watched those Bucks teams for years. They were highly competitive. They were a very good team for 8 to 10 years. They did about as well as you could do, considering you were losing the greatest young center in the game. So I said this the other day, you're never going to win when you lose a star. But the Kyrie Irving situation is interesting. I think Kevin Durant and James Harden can win the East if you give them wing defenders and a rim protector. I don't think they need a third scorer. And it's a weird idea. I said, Kyrie could potentially be the first star in my life I would move, and I wouldn't seek equal value. I would seek specific niche value because I believe I have two of the best three scorers in the NBA in the last decade. Does it make sense to you as somebody that in analytics, if a team decided to move a star, have there been times you think, listen, I want to win championships. Durant and Harden have four prime years left. not to speak for other teams, but it is a situation where you may have the two best pure scorers in the league on a team. You don't need the third. Like, talent's not always the answer to everything, right?
I agree with that. It's hard for me to talk specifically about Brooklyn, obviously, but I would say, you know, sometimes you don't always get to have it be perfect, right? You don't have like a 5-year plan that just sort of locks into place. And the thing, opportunities come up for different teams at different points. You have to jump on them and then make it work, right? And I think that's where, Brooklyn, finds themselves. They're jumping on opportunities, which I respect, and they're having to make it work. And honestly, for me, I'm just hoping it really doesn't work for quite a while. I think they're going to be one of the greatest offensive teams of all time, if not the best. And I'm really hoping their defense isn't good enough. They and the Bucks right now are probably our main competitors to making the finals right now. So.
You are a deal maker. We are seeing a barrage of young GMs in the NFL that are deal makers where their predecessors weren't. Jerry West says he couldn't sleep for weeks. The Shaq deal. It was unnerving. It was physically discomforting. When you make a trade, do you hover over it? Is it analytics? Do you sleep on it or do you go with your instincts? Tell me your process.
Yeah, as you might expect based on it's an agonizing, slog of, checking out every angle. Oh, well, now this player, if we get him, will now get pushed to the 3 instead of the 2. And how will that impact things? And will we still have the room in 2 years to make this kind of a move? And what is the actual value of that draft pick in that draft? Let's look at the high school players 2 years out. There's just a lot to it. But at the end of the day, it ends up being a lot of mostly superfluous work. Like, it does come down to that player that we're getting, he's great. And, we'll make the rest of it work essentially on those big deals.
Yeah. You are a little bit of a deal maker that way. Do you believe, if I said how many teams, it would almost be strange if everybody wasn't into analytics at this point, right? Like, we all know in baseball, it works. But if I asked you, NBA, how many teams are all in on analytics? Is it the whole league?
No, all in. I mean, it depends how you define all in, but the most extreme all in, you're talking 3 to 5. Definitely use it as a tool. You're at like 18 to 20, and then pays attention to it is all 30, to your point. Yeah. I mean, to me, like, I compare it to like Walmart moving in. Like, if you're the general store and Walmart moves in, you might still try to operate the same way, but you have to be aware of, that the dynamics have changed in the sport.
It is interesting when you face the Warriors in Houston. I said this about the Kansas City Chiefs. You don't want to chase points in football, but Kansas City's different. You may have to. You don't want to chase threes against the Warriors, but hell, there were times you had to. The old cliche is we play our game. But when you were going up against those great Warrior teams, there had never been anything like KD, Steph, and Klay together. Did you have to throw out some classic basketball thoughts and say, we may chase points tonight, we have to increase our threes?
Yeah, generally, I think it's a mistake to target like one team. But Golden State is the last team, I think, to start the year in the NBA with, above 50% title odds. Like, the Lakers came into this year at 21%, which is more normal. That's like more of a normal. Right. But the year we were facing Golden State, most likely, in the Western Conference Finals in 2018, we made a conscious effort the entire year that our entire season was going to be based on beating the Warriors. And we would play suboptimal against teams in the regular season just to be ready for Golden State. And that's why we went to switch everything. That's why we were three heavy. Now, a lot of these things work against most teams too, but the reality is everything we did was to be prepared for them. And obviously, you know, got close, but didn't pull it off. So.
Yeah. By the way, was that an easy sell to the franchise?
It was, because they eliminated us, I think, 5 years in a row. So, yeah, it was like, we should, like, really get good at beating the team we have never beaten. You know, like, yeah, so,
how punitive, how painful were the losses there?
I would say extremely. I mean, you're very good at your job. Arguably the peak, the pinnacle guy in the industry. I like to be there someday, and I think without a title you never have it, so pretty painful.
Yeah. So now, for you, you're a tennis player, you've got kids. People, being an NBA executive is really hard, but you tend to be you have your own spirit, you have your own kind of belief system, you have a Grateful Dead feel to you, that there's more to life than the meal ticket. How do you find moments of personal joy as you seek professional success? How does that look for you?
That's deep. That's deep, Colin. I'm thrilled to be talking to you today after your scare there. That sounded real scary. It makes you take a step back and think. I had a heart scare like that, nowhere near as bad, but, yeah. Anyway, real happy that this pulled off. I would say I've found that it's gotten harder and harder for me to find joy in the actual gameplay of our team. I love watching other teams, but watching our team, I just see the problems, the things we still need to fix to win the title. So I've lost a little joy in that. I still have the joy in like trying to help the team and how do we find players that can fit that. But I love that Doc Rivers is here and he can find the joy in the grind of getting the most out of each player. In terms of off the court, I find a lot of joy there. I think having like healthy other interests allows you to be more creative in your regular job. And so, as you know, I did a lot of stuff with musicals and chess and weird.
Yeah. So when you look at the Sixers, where don't you see joy? Where is the tweaking Daryl Morey saying, I need a shooter, I need another rim protector? What do you see that concerns you?
I would say, well, I have a lot of things that concern me, but the things that hurt me the most is, you know, our defense is elite and we can make a better transition, especially. But our offense, I only see when we, you know, and coaches see this too, when we're not executing well, how much better we can be. And then when we're not, I want to get mad. But a lot of what makes a good offense is the free form creativity, randomness of it.
Right.
And so that's hard for me. I would, you know, I did spend, you know, just recently a bunch of years in Houston where I knew every time down the court, X is going to happen. And then if they guard us Y, we're going to do Z. And if they guard us Q, we're going to do P. And it's going to be a good thing every time. And so that's just not reality. Like we need randomness and creativity in our offense, and it's going to set us up well for the playoffs.
Listen, Ben's not going to ever be a great shooter. It's okay. There's other things. He's a 6'10 guard. He's a tremendous defender. He gets the ball to shooters. He attacks the rim. He's a matchup nightmare for most guards. Instead of trying to fix or find a solution for the shooting thing, have you moved off that and understand we're just going to find him pieces that work with him?
100%. Actually, you know, I think Doc and I talk about this a lot, and I think Doc's done a great job with Ben. Look, you want to play to your strengths. He shoots like 60% at the rim, and he gets to the rim at will. Why would you do much else?
Right.
He finds super efficient three-point shots. He's the number one three-point assist guy in the league on a team that doesn't shoot a ton of threes. It shows you how well he gets it on time and on target, how well he collapses the D to find those shooters. If it's three left on the clock, And he's wide open. Is he going to take it? He is. And he has this year, and he's made some. So, but like, why would we want him to change who he is? And, you know, Doc had Rondo in Boston. They're very different players. But you can use a player in different ways to play to their strengths. And it doesn't just have to be what people always perceive.
So game tonight, Blazers, Sixers. You ever want to ditch that suit and just wear a tie-dye shirt and go to the game? It's a little stuffy. The NBA likes suits for their executives. Doesn't it wear you out sometimes?
I already never do that. So that I'm You're sure out. I'm already a pariah. Yeah, I don't. I wear t-shirts. If I wear a suit jacket, I wear t-shirts like this.
Thank you.
Underneath, yeah. So I'm there with you. I do want Doc to have to wear a uniform, though. I want to go to the baseball approach and make them all. And you have to wear a uniform from your era. So he's got to wear the 80s. Short shorts and all that. So
hey, it's great.
We play Portland tomorrow, by the way.
Portland tomorrow.
Yeah. Oh, but this is airing tomorrow.
Yeah. Who the hell knows these days, right?
Yeah, it's
just, we'll just edit it. And, you know, we try to be honest with our audience, but at some point when I can get Daryl Morey, I figure out a time I interview you, we put the podcast up.
Thanks.
All right. It's great talking to you. Next time you're in Los Angeles, I no longer live in Manhattan Beach. I moved up to Brentwood. So now I'm in the swanky part of town. So I'm closer to all those nice restaurants that you NBA teams stay at. So let me take you to lunch or dinner next time you're in.
I would love that. It would be amazing. And I love your prodigy, Nick Wright.
Oh, he's my guy.
You launched him.
So. Well, you know what is great about Nick? We agree on nothing. And yet we're so close. We agree on virtually nothing. But when a friendship really clicks, you know that it's like a marriage. Like, we don't have to agree on stuff to love each other.
I'm with you there. So thanks again for having me on. I appreciate it.
All right, Daryl. Great stuff. Want to thank Daryl Morey for joining us on the Colin Cowherd podcast. Hey, follow us at The Volume Sports on Twitter, at The Volume Sports on Instagram. Hit subscribe. Rate and review. We appreciate all the feedback. We're a new company. We're busting our butt. We just want to get you as team members. We will talk soon. Fun guest on Monday, Joe Buck.